Hello and welcome back to the Relationship Super Conference. My name is Jaya Bristow and I'm one of your hosts. And today I am so excited to be joined by the incredible Yasmin Benoit. Welcome, Yasmin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So Yasmin Benoit is a British model, writer, speaker, and award-winning aromantic asexual activist. She is on the board of directors of the Asexual Visibility and Education Network and the founder of the hashtag This Is What Asexual Looks Like movement and the co-founder of International Asexuality Day, which is on the 6th of April. Her work has been featured in the likes of British Vogue, Cosmopolitan magazine, Forbes, and Insider. This year, she was included on the Attitude 101 Influential Figures list as a trailblazer in the Future Under 25 category, and she made the Visible 100 list as a community campaigner. So Yasmin, let's start with the basics. What exactly is asexuality and what is aromanticism?
Well, asexuality is commonly defined as experiencing little to no sexual attraction. That is the general definition of asexual, but then there is the ace spectrum, which encompasses gray sexuality, where you feel like you're in kind of the in-between, or demisexuality, where it's more about the way that you form sexual attraction to people. And then aromanticism is kind of like the romantic counterpart. It's experiencing little to no romantic attraction. And that can also exist on a spectrum like the rest of sexuality, really.
Wonderful. And so I really like this notion of them existing on spectrums. And I'm curious, how often do you feel they intersect? Like, how often are people both asexual and aromantic, or can people be just one and not the other?
I feel like, I mean, at first, because I am both, I kind of assumed that they went together very, very often. But the more I started engaging with like the rest of the asexual community, I realized that there are actually a lot of asexual people that aren't aromantic. They're still romantically attracted to men or women or anything else. And it's definitely not a given. And similarly, there are aromantic people that are still sexually attracted to other people. They're just not romantically attracted to them. So they can exist completely separately, or they can overlap. It's not uncommon for it to overlap, but it's also not like, they're not inherently linked.
Right. And so what are some common misconceptions people have about asexuality and aromanticism?
I feel like they're slightly different. So I think that for asexuality, the common misconceptions is that there's something physically wrong with you, like in a kind of more medical sense. They tend to go for like, oh, it's like a hormonal imbalance, or it's a psychological problem, it's the consequence of some kind of trauma or some kind of physical illness, or it's you just being celibate or frigid or prude or something like that. And then for aromanticism, because it's related to romantic attraction, which is a very socially determined, like objective, subjective experience. So it's something that people associate more with your kind of like mind, your soul, your personality, your life experience. And people just kind of associate it with being a bit of a psychopath and having like a kind of lack of an emotional part of your brain, like an inability to form human connections with people, kind of like a kind of cold heartlessness. It tends to be the aromantic association.
Right. And so I guess my next question is, first of all, when did you and how did you realize that you were both asexual and aromantic? And what does it mean for you to be both these things?
Well, I feel like there's a point in life where everybody is pretty asexual. I don't know whether there's a time where everyone's pretty aromantic. I think, well, no, there are some kids that, you know, they're very much focused on romantic stuff. They want to have boyfriends and girlfriends. They're very interested in that from a young age. And then there are others that do not care until they're like teenagers. But I definitely feel like there's a point where everybody's pretty asexual. And I didn't realize that I was different at all until everyone else seemed to realize that they weren't asexual. And it's pretty much, I guess, early puberty when those feelings start to kick in and everyone was suddenly concerned with dating each other, and they were attracted to each other, and they fancied each other, and they wanted to go out with each other. And I was kind of like, okay, we're doing this now. Okay. It wasn't something that I related to. I didn't have any of those same desires, but I didn't have the language for it. And at the time, being aromantic and asexual, it all felt like part of the same thing. I didn't really make a distinction between it until I realized that there were actually like different terms and different experiences. So I was probably like 10 when I noticed something was up.
Wow. And I really like the fact that you talk about we all are asexual at some point, right? And then I guess some people develop sexuality, and in your case you didn't, but it's really helpful to understand that for those of us who are more allosexual, which is the opposite of asexual.
Although I would say technically I feel like it's not even like not developing sexuality, it's just not developing a sexuality that's directed towards anyone. Because technically when we develop sexuality, for all of us, it is completely unrelated to other people. Like scientifically, like kids realize that, you know, that their bodies do things and that you could touch yourself and that will feel good and stuff. And they realize that before they know what sex is. And it's completely independent of sexual attraction. It's just then you get to an age where then you start to want to involve other people in your sexuality and it becomes related to your attraction. And I think that's just the element of sexuality that is kind of missing from asexuality. But you still have one, it just doesn't really develop in that direction, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, and I love that distinction, so thank you for clarifying that. And I think that's really helpful to understand, especially for a lot of people who might be feeling asexual and who are struggling with that, to understand that, you know, you can still have a sexuality, but that it's not, it's more, it sounds like from what I'm hearing, that it's more sort of internal rather than externally oriented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you work as a model, which is quite a sexualized industry. So how do you navigate being asexual whilst constantly being sexualized?
I mean, I feel like you're constantly sexualized anyway if you're just like a woman existing. It's just in one instance you get paid for it. So it's been, if anything, I think that kind of makes it easier. It's kind of within your control, I guess. Yeah, I don't find it to be that challenging just because I don't really sexualize things. I don't sexualize myself. So when I'm modeling, I'm more concerned with like the logistics of it. I'm more thinking like, okay, well, the lighting's here, so I should probably face that way, and I need to angle this way, and the light has to travel for me this way, and the garment's shaped like this, so I should probably do this. And I'm thinking more like in that sense, rather than I hope these viewers think I'm hot. So it's, yeah, for me, it's kind of more logistical, but I think it's more perplexing, I think, for viewers than it is for me, because I think people place a lot of their own expectations for some reason on the images that they see, and it becomes harder for people to kind of compute that you would be by some standard sexually attractive but not sexually attracted to anyone else. And I think that there's still in the parts of our minds, despite feminism, despite how far we've come, where people still kind of think you must be doing it for me, or you must be doing it for someone. You're not just wearing this or doing this because you think it looks nice or you think you look cool or you feel good like that. It has to be for someone. And then there's kind of like a weird conflict of interest that people detect. So I think it's only really complicated in that sense.
Right. So once again, we're back. It's back about this idea of external projections and performing for the world rather than doing something for oneself. And that's how people sometimes get confused. They assume that if you look a certain way or you're dressing a certain way, that it must be for the world. It must be a performance rather than doing it for yourself or as a job, or like you say, focusing more on the logistics and the lighting and the feel of the clothes and all of that.
Yeah, so I think it's more complicated in that sense. I feel like in the actual industry, people don't really care that much about the model's personal life. It's very much about, you know, how you look and how you perform and how your portfolio looks and like what experience you have rather than anything else. I think it's only really complicated by the kind of perceptions of the audience and the kind of confusion that happens when they, mainly guys, although women have done it as well, but they just don't really understand like you're like, I guess and it's strange to me because I never really thought this, seeing models as like as just a normal person, I never really thought like there was any kind of like, I was aware they were just advertising a product that has nothing to do with themselves. But I think some people really kind of believe that there was some kind of availability there, and it's the unavailability that I think kind of also confuses people.
Right. And so what do your relationships look like?
Predominantly platonic, unless you count familial relationships. I don't know if you call your relationships with your family members platonic, but I focus most of my attention on my like family and platonic relationships over romantic or sexual relationships.
And so when you say platonic, those are your friends and close friends, and you still form attachment to friendships, but you don't have sexual and romantic feelings for people. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
Cool. And so do you have any advice for people who might be either listening to this or have previously heard of this and struggling themselves with coming to terms and accepting their either asexuality and or aromanticism?
I mean, my advice, I always say, which hopefully isn't like offensive to like super spiritual or religious people, but we only have like one guaranteed life. So I always say like, at least try and live this one as true to yourself as you can possibly be. No one else really cares as much as you care about what you're doing with your life. And I know that we're always kind of taught in our society that you have to kind of live it this way, or you're not really going to be accepted, or people aren't going to like you, and they're going to think you're weird, and you're not going to be fulfilled. But other people's reception is not really what's going to give you fulfillment. It's how you feel about yourself and how happy you feel and how comfortable you feel. So I always tell people just to kind of focus on doing what makes them feel like they're on the right track and what they feel like is the right kind of relationship for them and the right kind of actions for them. And don't be so concerned with other people's kind of judgmental projections, because they probably don't really care that much. They're just bored.
And how about having conversations with close friends or family members about being asexual?
I mean, I feel like it kind of depends on your relationships with those people. I think sometimes it can be easier with friends than it is family members. When people ask me about like coming out to family, I usually say, send them a resource first. Like send them an article, send them something that you feel like kind of accurately represents it, because people believe resources a bit more than they usually believe you personally, because they tend to think that you're just kind of found a cool word on the internet that you've just attached yourself to for fun, and they don't realize it's an actual phenomenon that like exists in millions of people. So I feel like in that instance, it's usually helpful to throw a resource in there. But yeah, and I mean, in terms of your friends, I mean, hopefully they would already have kind of some idea. Hopefully if they know you well enough, they would gather something. But you know, I think you should just be honest. And I think that you should just kind of explain what it means for you, because there's like a range of asexual experiences out there. And, you know, say, this is what it means for me. So this is what I like, this is what I don't like. So I just wanted to tell you this for this reason. I feel comfortable if we approach it like this. And hopefully if they're good friends, then that would all go pretty well, hopefully.
And I'm curious to hear more about the range of asexual experiences that you just mentioned.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, being asexual and aromantic, that I feel like that saves me a lot of time. I think if I was asexual and not aromantic, and I was seeking out romantic relationships and having to kind of deal with it almost as like a potential hurdle, I guess, of trying to meet someone and explain asexuality to them, especially if they're not asexual, then, you know, that could be more effort than I personally have to deal with. That is quite a different experience to what I have to deal with. If I was homoromantic and asexual, I'd be perceived by most of the world as a lesbian, and therefore I would have, you know, that would be a pretty different experience. If I was asexual but I still had sex, that would probably be a different experience. So if I was aromantic but I still wanted to be, or I was still in some kind of partnership, that would be a different experience. So it kind of, you know, it kind of depends on your well, what you're doing really. And also the rate different asexual people feel towards, you know, sexuality in general. Like there are some asexual people that never masturbate. There are some asexual people that never have sex. There are some that are repulsed by the thought of sex. They don't like talking about sex. They don't like hearing about it. And there are some that would literally participate in it. They don't care. And there are some that don't mind talking about it. They don't care. So, you know, it kind of, there's a range of different experiences, even if you're all using the same terminology.
Right. And so not only are there, I guess, a range of experiences within the same umbrella term, but there's also, as you said, it's a spectrum. So people can be at different points across the spectrum as well.
Yeah. I mean, I know like there are demisexual people who only experience sexual attraction on occasion to the people that they've already formed like a close emotional bond with. So you could be demisexual and be feeling sexual attraction and be in a relationship, and that experience is then completely different to mine as someone who's also on the asexual spectrum, but it's still, I'm not experiencing sexual attraction and I don't and I haven't done. So it's not the same experience really, but it is still under the same umbrella because of the frequency or the amount of people to which they would feel it towards. So it still falls under. So there's a range of different experiences, and there are people that might experience a little bit of sexual attraction but not act on it, and then there might be some that don't experience much but do still have sex. So in those ways there can definitely be quite a range of experiences.
Brilliant. And I guess, you know, in the same way I was asking you about how to navigate talking to family and friends about it, what about with therapy? Because I know that sometimes even therapists don't take asexuality seriously and it can be quite dismissive, or as you mentioned at the beginning when we were talking about misconceptions, might like blame it, and I put that in quote marks, on, you know, trauma or on attachment styles or on all kinds of things. So do you have any advice about like engaging in a conversation with one's therapist about asexuality or aromanticism?
I mean, it's a complicated thing. Like, I mean, conversion rates for asexual people, like that is a thing. We are statistically a little more likely to have that experience in some degrees because, well, asexuality has been medicalized like other sexual orientations. It was only recently did they adapt the DSM in the United States to say, because hypoactive sexual desire disorder is pretty much asexuality, is pretty much summarized like asexuality. And they have to put a distinction saying, unless the person identifies as asexual, because otherwise, if you were to approach a doctor and say, oh, I don't experience sexual attraction, their instinct would be to put you in therapy and give you medication, which wouldn't have helped. And I know people that have had that experience in this country as well. And I remember when I had a school counselor in like university, and I was trying to talk to them about like my exam stress because I was a hardcore perfectionist. And I mentioned I was asexual, and they were like, oh, so obviously that's what you're going to want to talk about, and that's what we're going to be addressing in this session. And I was like, no, actually, it was about the exam. That wasn't a concern of mine. We don't need to talk about that. But their instinct was that like, okay, this is obviously a problem for you, which it wasn't. So it is definitely something that is kind of can be awkward to navigate. I would definitely recommend trying to seek out, if possible. I mean, it's hard to find therapists anyway. So you're kind of just lucky if you have one at all. But if you have any kind of option, I would recommend trying to seek out like inclusive ones or people that know about asexuality, or at least maybe send them, maybe educate your therapist, like send them some resources, send them some information. So from the get-go, you could be like, okay, this is the scenario. This is what it is. Hopefully you can use this knowledge in the future and you're not going to try and address this like it's an issue, because it isn't an issue. So that would be really the only thing I can recommend, that it's kind of hard to get therapists in the first place, let alone to try and you know, find one that is specifically educated about asexuality. It would probably be quite hard, but I guess sometimes you have to educate them too.
Yeah, and I guess that can be an issue with a lot of sort of marginalized identities, you know, especially on the LGBTQIA plus spectrum. So that's always helpful to try and find a therapist that already understands that to some degree, or as you say, to send them a bunch of resources and educate them so that they know that they have a bit more information going in. And I'm curious, do you have any advice about like for people who are in relationships with someone who identifies as asexual and or aromantic, about navigating that and how to be supportive to one's partner and or one's friend, or, you know, anyone that one is in a relationship with, I guess, who identifies on those spectrums?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if we're starting with asexuality, one of the things that we're kind of taught is that, you know, sex is the expression of love, is the expression of like your interest in somebody. And if you're not sexually attracted to someone and they're not really like the one for you, then maybe they don't really like you. There's something wrong with you. And it's like a reflection of who you are. Whereas I think that if you're in a relationship with someone who is asexual, then you should keep in mind that like for them not experiencing sexual attraction to you is not a reflection of you. It's not a reflection of anything but their sexual orientation. That doesn't mean that they don't love you. That doesn't mean that you can't have like a perfectly fulfilling relationship. It's just that is a component of it. And also, I think that you need to, I think it is good to kind of establish like what the boundaries are with like sexual related things, because there are lots of people that are asexual, but they're in relationships with people that aren't asexual. And they do still have sex because that's the way of feeling closer to their partners. That's something their partner's interested in doing, and they don't really mind either way. It's kind of like, heard a lot of people compare it to just like doing the dishes. It's like, it's not a problem. It's not like at the top of your list of things you want to do, but it's not like a big deal. It's not going to scar you if you do it. So I think it's good to kind of have that conversation about like what you would be willing to do, like, and like how, what the boundaries are there. And I think that if you're in a relationship with someone who's aromantic, which presumably most likely isn't a romantic relationship, it's probably going to be like a, what we call a queer platonic relationship, where it's kind of, it's platonic, but it's a little more than that. Like you might be like living together, or you might have like the same mortgage. You might like get married, but like platonically, like you might have a family together, but not be romantically like attracted to each other, like those kind of relationships. And again, I think it's important just to know that like, romantic love is not the epitome of love. It is not the most important kind of love. It's not a higher form of love. Like platonic love can be just as strong, and it's not like, again, that's not a reflection of you. It's just a reflection of their orientation, and it's not something that like makes your relationship like lesser or less valid or less important or legitimate. And again, that's probably one of the things that you should definitely have a conversation, like addressing kind of like language you'd want to use or boundaries you'd want to have and all those things.
Brilliant. I think open communication and conversations around boundaries and expectations in a relationship are always incredibly helpful, regardless of what kind of sexuality someone identifies with.
Definitely.
And so what do you feel that those of us who are identifying more on the allosexual end of the spectrum or the alloromantic end of the spectrum, what can we learn about relationships from people on the ace and aro spectrum?
I think that they could probably just learn that the components that we're taught are essential and the most important for relationships really aren't. Like, I know that some people kind of find it hard to compute, like, oh, like, if you're not sexually attracted to someone, then how can you be romantically attracted to them? Like, how is that a relationship? How would that work? But there are many examples of that working. And I think that, I mean, even people that aren't asexual, they don't want to have sex all the time. They don't, sometimes you don't really, you know, a sexual attraction fades to partners. Sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower, sometimes you're more interested than others. But I think that no matter what your sexuality is, a lot of people still feel a pressure to kind of perform and to kind of have a relationship that ticks all these boxes. You're kind of taught that if you're not really having that much sex in your romantic relationship, then there's something inherently wrong with it, and that's a sign that everything's going badly. I think that one thing you could learn from asexual people in that sense is that like that is not necessarily a bad thing, and like sex is not the most important component of a romantic relationship, and they can exist without that element in the same way as you could have a sexual relationship with no romance and no love whatsoever. You could have a romantic relationship with no sex or less sex or not as much sex as people might expect you to be having. And I also think that from the aromantic side, I think one thing people could definitely learn is that being romantically in love is not the be all and end all. I know a lot of people who do experience romantic attraction, and they really have like a kind of singlehood anxiety. Like it stresses them when they're not in a relationship. And then when they are in a relationship, they're stressed about maintaining it. And then when they break up, they're recovering from that. And then there's this weird competitiveness of getting a new partner when your partner ex gets a partner. And it's just like this whole weird cycle where people feel like they can't just not be someone's one. Otherwise they haven't really found fulfillment in life, or they haven't achieved what they're supposed to be achieving, or that they're missing something essential, or that they're not good enough in this world if someone doesn't want to date them. And I think that that's something people could definitely learn from, like, the aromantic community, is that you can be, live a perfectly happy, fulfilling life without being someone else's other half. Like, you are actually a fully complete person from the time you were born, pretty much.
Wonderful. I think that's such an important point to make. And I think that, you know, yeah, I really appreciate you bringing that in, especially that idea of being fulfilled and content without needing to be in relationship with another person, but also just realizing how much extra time and mental headspace you must have not having to go through all those cycles of, like, angst and, like, the beginnings of relationships and how much do they like me, how much do they not like me, and then during the relationship and all the relationship drama, and then, like you say, the end of the relationship, and then, like, all the feelings towards one's ex and getting over it, and then the next relationship, and then I'm non-monogamous, so, you know, I sometimes have multiple relationships at once and juggling that as well. So
you guys have a lot more social energy than I do.
Yeah. But I think you, yeah, I envy how much extra headspace you must have, how much extra mental room you must have, and therefore how much more energy you must have to dedicate to other things.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I do feel like I spend a little too much time playing Sims 4 nowadays. Like, I'm putting a lot, but too much effort into playing that when I could be doing more constructive things with my time. But I do feel like in some ways it has definitely saved me some time, especially as a teenager. I feel like I probably saved my parents a lot of worry. I didn't have to worry so much about what I was up to because I wasn't really doing that much.
Yeah. And I'm curious as well, like, is there anything you feel people can learn about their relationships with themselves through this lens of asexuality and aromanticism?
I mean, I feel like the main thing would just be, like, that you are enough as you are. So, I mean, I guess one main thing that sexual attraction and romantic attraction both have in common is that it's supposed to literally and figuratively attach you to someone else as a way of feeling good and a way of feeling connected and a way of feeling more complete as yourself. And I think that one fun thing about being asexual and aromantic is that you kind of have a kind of innate independence. Your kind of emotional... your emotionalness and your sense of self is not dependent on someone else's, like a specific person's positive reinforcement, and your sexual satisfaction is not dependent on someone else, and your sexuality is very independent. And I think that that is something that I think everyone could probably do with a bit more of that, whether you're asexual, aromantic or not. I think it's just good to kind of feel like you are enough as yourself. You don't need someone else to tell you that. You don't need to be attached to someone else literally or figuratively to feel like you are a complete person.
Brilliant. And so I think we're almost done, but I'm curious about to hear just a little bit more about, yeah, I guess your relationship with yourself and your sexuality, because you talked about having a sexuality, but that it's not directed externally. So if that's not prying too much, I'm curious about, your relationship with yourself and what you mean by your relationship with your sexuality.
I masturbate, if that's the answer to the question.
It wasn't particularly, but I think I was just curious about more how you experience sexuality as an asexual person.
I mean, for me, I guess it's mainly, I mean, I guess it kind of comes from within, as weird and kind of cliche as that sounds. It isn't something that's specifically related to, like, another individual. It isn't something that's projected towards someone. It isn't something that involves anyone else. I would always say it's a very almost like childlike kind of experience of sexuality, in a sense, because it's back to that phase of life where it was all very much just about, like, your physical self and less about, oh, I want to be with this person, or oh, I really like that person, or I wonder what it would be like to be with that person, and I want to think about what I would do with that person and what they do with me. Like, it's completely detached from that. It's very much just like a kind of one-on-one kind of psychological, physical experience, I guess.
Wonderful. And so I'm curious as well, because obviously, as well as being an asexual activist, you're also a Black woman. And So just in terms of those intersections of marginalization and being, you know, in part of those, both those minorities, how does that impact you, especially when Black women are often over-sexualized?
Yeah, I think that is probably one of the main things that kind of complicates the experience. I think it's harder for people to believe that I'm asexual. I think it's kind of, it's another added layer that makes it kind of harder to compute, especially since when it comes to kind of the representation of asexuality, it tends to be white. Like whenever people, when people get interviewed, when there's articles or if there's a character, if it's fictional or non-fictional, they tend to kind of go for like a white guy or a white girl. And, you know, and I think, yeah, I don't look like that. And I think it's when you kind of add that into like the general kind of way that Black women in particular and Black men are both kind of depicted in a way that is very hypersexualized, like the two things just don't tend to go together. So I think throughout my life that has made it harder for people to believe that I was asexual. And I think it also means that some of the reactions I get, particularly in my work, I just noticed that like some reactions are a bit harsher than what like white people get when they say the exact same things about asexuality, because then it's not just like, I know, like ace phobia, but then there's like a kind of like racial element that's tied into it as well. And it definitely makes navigating the different spaces interesting. I guess the asexual community in itself is also quite white, not because I think that there aren't asexual people of different ethnicities. It's just that the people that tend to be loudest and are kind of amplified the most tend to be white. So you kind of end up standing out in every kind of community that you're in. You're kind of always the odd one out. So it's definitely a weird one to kind of navigate for sure.
Yeah, I think a lot of the queer communities can be predominantly white. And I know that a lot of queer people of color, and again, when I use the word queer, I'm talking about the full LGBTQIAP plus spectrum. I think a lot of people can struggle, but when on top of that, when you belong to a group that's even more sort of a minority within the queer community, like being ace, or that's a group that's easily invisibilized, I think that can be even harder. And then on top of that, when you add the racial element as well, I think it can be incredibly difficult. And whilst I'm allosexual, I'm also bi/pansexual. And so I think, you know, I've often had conversations with friends who are ace where we have that in common of just being invisibilized both by the dominant groups, by like the straight cishet groups, as well as sometimes within the queer community itself.
Yeah, it's definitely, I feel like on one hand, I think being Black kind of sort of helped me personally in the sense of like, I was kind of already used to standing out. I mean, I'm from Baksha, so like, there wasn't that many. I was often like being the only Black girl in my class before. So standing out was not something that was like particularly unusual to me. So therefore I always felt like being asexual was not the weirdest thing about me. So it wasn't at the top of my concerns of like identities or how I was going to be perceived. But then doing this kind of work, it has kind of made me more aware of like the intersections and how one kind of impacts the other. And I always say that, like, you know, the LGBTQIAP plus community is no more like immune to the same kind of stereotypes and racism as in comparison to like other communities. So I have definitely experienced that within the asexual community as well. Like that does come up. And I know that people kind of think that nowadays we're in such like an inclusive time that ticking as many boxes as possible would be like preferable, but I've definitely had opportunities that I have lost on the basis of them being like, I don't think people will understand it if you say it. So it is definitely like a kind of extra hurdle to kind of get people to kind of empathize in the same way as they would if I was white and saying the same stuff.
Yeah. That makes sense in the world we live in, unfortunately. And I'm sorry that you've had those experiences. How can the audience find out more about you and your work, Yasmin?
I mean, you could find me on my social media, which is most of them are at the Yasmin Benoit. And they have a website, which is yasminbenoit.co.uk. Or you could just Google me and you probably find articles I've done and kind of other videos and stuff that I've done and other media appearances that I've done. But yeah, I'm pretty easy to find. But also you could check out the hashtag This Is What Asexual Looks Like if you want to see some examples of how diverse the asexual community is. And you could go to asexuality.org, which is the website of AVA and the Asexual Visibility and Education Network. And there's also internationalasexualityday.org, I believe, which is for our day, which will not be happening until next year. But actually, it's ACE Week in October from the 24th. So I'm pretty sure there's an ACE Week website. Can't remember what it is now. ACEweek.org, maybe? So yeah, there's definitely some more kind of resources and stuff over there. And I'll probably be doing quite a bit for ACE Week as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for all of those links and resources. And I encourage people to find out more about Yasmin and her work and to Google you, as you say, because there's lots of fantastic things. Also, I follow you on Instagram and I love stalking your Instagram. So I recommend everyone else do the same as well.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for your time today.